Hello and welcome to the Future Building Podcast. I'm Matthew Aitchison and I'm Professor at Monash University and CEO of Building 4.0 CRC, a cooperative R&D hub for the building industry. Since launching the podcast back in 2020, we've brought you the best and brightest from the global building industry. We've tried to get a feel for where we might be headed and who might be likely to take us there. In the main, this took the shape of interviews with industry experts, entrepreneurs, researchers, investors, and commentators. In these interviews, I've tried to keep my own opinions to a minimum and focus on the brilliant guests sitting opposite me. Today, I'm excited to say that we're launching a new stream of content, which I'm calling Essays. Essays are an opportunity to talk about ideas and opinions, to provide commentary and analysis on key issues, to explore the history and theory of building. And it's also an opportunity to provide journalism that I think is missing from the mainstream and also to engage in some future casting. I hope you enjoy them and find them helpful. I should point out that all opinions are my own and do not represent those of Monash University or Building 4.0 CRC. And as ever, Future Building Podcast is proudly sponsored by Building 4.0 CRC. The gearing is wrong in housing. Last month, I attended a property conference. Like many conferences in the building industry, the content can be a little predictable, and I find myself hearing versions of things that I've seen and heard at many conferences before. But one remark caught my ear. I want to come back to that remark, but first I'll need to take you on a little detour to describe the context around it that made it stand out for me. Like most OECD countries, Australia has a housing supply shortfall, and as in other places, a lot of debate has occurred as to why this is so and what might be done to address it. Many of the positions arising from these debates would be familiar to anyone who follows the news, and most were being rehearsed on stage that day. There's too much taxation in building. NIMBYs and anti-development forces are slowing housing supply. Planning approvals are Byzantine and slow. Construction unions are coercive and drag down productivity. There's too much regulation and red tape. And a slightly newer argument that's emerging around the world is immigration is too high and there aren't enough houses for everyone. Now, we could say that there's another handful of issues in the housing debate, which, depending on who is organizing the conference, are likely to surface. But this was a property summit, and the agenda tended to stick fairly closely to the party line. So no mention of greedy developers, land banking, or tax settings that supercharge speculation at this conference. The public debate on housing can feel a lot like a game of whack-a-mole. No sooner have we bashed down one issue before another one rises. I've come to learn that there is an ecosystem behind this virtual rotisserie of complaint, one exacerbated by the media spotlight, that moves the blame game from one hot-button topic to another, never resolving, never synthesizing, never complicating. I've counted around 8 issues that are on permanent rotation here in the Australian media. In other countries, it's very much the same, even if the issues vary or the exact number might vary as well. One issue that rarely seems to make the cut on the conference circuit or in media is rising construction costs. This is not strictly speaking true, because it does often get a brief mention, perhaps as a barrier to doing business or as a brake on housing supply, but it's rarely taken a step further, and this is what I mean. Rarely have I heard a discussion about what could be done to actually reduce construction costs. First, let me plead the case for the centrality of rising construction costs, before returning to why I find it so strange that there is so little interest in talking about this, much less developing a plan to fix it. Firstly, as I travel around the world, most of the building professionals I talk to are unequivocal in stating that the rising cost of construction is putting a serious brake on housing supply. Projects just aren't stacking up, they say. Secondly, using the example of the suburban family house and a high-rise apartment, my back-of-the-envelope analysis has shown that construction costs for these housing types have increased around 65% in the last 10 years, and that's taking Australia as an example. This is around double the rate of inflation and equates to around $200,000 for a single family house, or around $150,000 for an average sized two bedroom apartment. Now, in case you're not in the housing market or you don't know the value of the Australian dollar, this represents a 20% deposit for a new buyer of a suburban house or apartment. In other words, it is the difference between a new buyer getting a mortgage or not. Finally, and I have to admit my own surprise in saying this, but economic theory states conclusively that this cost escalation is completely predictable. Now, let me explain this last point a little further and introduce you to Baumol's cost disease. It's named after the economist William Baumol, who first pointed out in the 1960s that sectors whose products and services experienced little productivity improvement, especially those labor-intensive industries, were likely to experience cost increases at a much higher rate than other sectors in the economy who were able to improve their productivity. On the one hand, let's take healthcare and construction, two industries with very large traditional workforces, where costs are going up. On the other hand, let's look at manufacturing and even retail, where costs are not increasing at the same rate, and in some cases, going down for their goods and services. The effects of cost disease are not just apparent in areas like construction, education, or healthcare, but also in less prominent fields like theatrical companies or orchestras, which, by their very nature, rely on people, and lots of them, to function. So, bringing all this together, let's summarize the position we're in. Construction costs are stopping new housing being built because people can no longer afford to buy them. And this situation, at least if we can trust mainstream economic theory, is completely predictable. Wouldn't this situation warrant further investigation? Shouldn't this require a plan to investigate how these costs became so high and what might be done to begin to point the needle in the other direction? All reasonable questions, I would say. That is, if we did not take into account a pervasive, though slightly mystifying, culture in the building industry that I've come to term the exceptionalism of building. Now, we don't have time to deal with this today, and I'll come back to this, I think, in the future, but let's just summarize by saying that for several reasons, the building industry does not behave like other industries and markets. When the building industry bottoms out, or when it's faced with a really serious issue or a shortcoming, apparently it's okay to say, well, that's just building. And this is what I mean by the exceptionalism of building. Back to our conference now, though. The context I've described here around construction costs and their escalation was why that offhanded remark at the conference last month caught my ear. In talking of the housing market, a panelist noted, when we doubled the number of solar panels in Australia, costs come down, but when we double the number of houses, costs go up. Now I'm going to repeat that because it bears repetition. When we double the number of solar panels in Australia, costs come down. When we double the number of houses, costs go up. I thought it was an incredibly simple formulation of the problem. And for someone like me, who spent so long trying to draw attention to this issue and others, I knew that I would immediately need to steal it. The panelist in question was Richard Yetsenga, Global Chief Economist for ANZ, one of Australia's big four banks. And yet, after Richard had so succinctly pointed out this fact, the clouds did not part and angels did not descend. Instead, we moved on to talk about red tape, overregulation, and planning delays in the industry. But Richard's remark shows us that the gearing is wrong in housing, and we might extend Richard's explanation to the wider building industry. The gearing is not only wrong, but it's been wrong for quite some time. How can it be, from a business point of view, that precisely when record numbers of people need housing the most, and that the price that can be charged for those houses is at a record high, that it has, as the Federal Minister of Housing in Australia, Clara Neil, said, become uneconomic to build those same houses? Others have referred to this as a market failure. And while I agree with this formulation, more nuance, I think, is required to unpack this, as building is not like other industries and houses are not like other products and services. And just to be clear, this is not the same kind of exceptionalism I spoke of earlier. It's more like the other side of the medallion. Let me try to explain. When it comes to housing, everyone has a finger in the pie. This simple fact has led to numerous externalities and distortions in the market that have proven highly complex and somewhat intractable. This is why some kind of simple sweeping change has not already occurred. This is why there is no quick fix. This is why so many countries who all have completely different policies can have the exact same problem. Imagine dozens of invisible webs that keep us tied to the status quo. If we try to pull in one direction, we find we're tethered in ways that were not immediately visible. This is why we should always beware of anyone offering a silver bullet to solve the housing problem. What we're talking about here is a really, really big issue and an often overlooked issue, but it's just one piece of the puzzle. Rewind the tape 3 months, and we're no longer at an industry conference, but a government roundtable focused precisely on these matters. The invited guests are in the midst of a spirited discussion about what's needed to change the building industry to unlock supply, and somewhat predictably, I was arguing for the need to bring down construction costs. A colleague, one of the largest providers of housing in the country, flatly said, "Costs never come down." And as we have just heard, he was 100% right. But another colleague spoke up and said, "In manufacturing, costs do come down." And he went on to describe how, when he was working for a large car manufacturer, teams were required to find annual efficiency gains of 3% in their areas. For so long, it's been assumed that construction costs must increase. It has become a kind of immutable law of the jungle. But the researcher in me asks, is this true? And more importantly, how could we turn this around? How do other industries make costs come down? How could the gearing in housing be made to work as in other industries? Before trying to answer this question, we first need to understand why construction costs increase when demand for housing goes up. A by no means exhaustive list of these reasons would likely include the following: workforce availability. There is a relatively fixed number of workers, and greater demand for their services mean that they can charge higher prices. Imagine a construction equivalent to Uber's surge pricing. Next, development economics. The building industry only builds when it is profitable to do so. This sounds so commonsensical as to be ridiculous, but it's actually quite perverse, and it's one of the reasons that policy experts argue that housing supply alone will not solve housing affordability. Another way of saying this is that builders and developers only build when the prices are at the top of the market. Next, property values. I've long suspected, but not verified in a scientific way, that rising construction costs have hidden in the shadow of astronomical rises in property prices over the last 3 decades. If the value of a property is seen to be increasing at a much faster rate, let's say 20 to 40% annually, then a 6 to 10% annual increase in construction costs for the same property might merely be seen as negligible or even just a cost of doing business. Next is thin margins. Many outsiders to the building industry do not understand how thin the margins in construction projects can be. The unit costs are so large, in some cases into the hundreds of millions or even billions, but the profit margins may only be 1.5 to 3%. In such a situation, and we saw this in the inflationary aftermath of COVID, builders needed to price in cost escalations for materials and labor, which of course had an inflationary effect on construction costs more generally. And finally, and perhaps most understandably, comes material shortages. Material suppliers do not make more material than they intend to sell. And if demand increases quickly or unexpectedly, or if the ships that transport these materials are interrupted, see COVID or trade wars or natural disasters, then there will be a momentary shortage of materials, leading to higher prices in the short term. In closing down this essay, I think it's worthwhile to think about what we could do to fix the gearing of this housing production system. A quick answer would be to make construction more like manufacturing, which, as those of you who would have gathered from listening to the Future Building podcast over the last few years, is very much easier said than done. A more high-level but still achievable idea is found in Baumol's Cost Disease and also our government roundtable. As my colleague pointed out, not all industries accept cost escalation. Many manufacturing industries make products and services more efficient every year. What do these manufacturing industries have that building does not? How do they improve efficiency and productivity continuously? I think we can learn from these industries. To visualize the problems I've outlined today, imagine a Russian doll. I call it the Russian doll of housing supply. The visible outer layer is a housing supply problem. But our supply problem is really a cost problem. And our cost problem is really a productivity problem. And our productivity problem is really, and this is the tiny little Russian doll right at the heart, is really an innovation problem. To answer the improvement of supply, cost, and productivity, we need innovation. Sadly, this is another idea we don't hear about enough on the conference circuit or in the media. The building industry needs to take a leaf out of the book of every other major sector of the economy who have reaped massive benefits from innovating their processes, services, and products to make them faster, more efficient, and of higher quality. Think of the automotive industry, aerospace, shipbuilding, or any of the mass-produced consumer electronics. All are making superior products than a decade ago, and if not at a lower price, then certainly with lower costs. It's worth pointing out that this does not need to be a shining new era of robots and AI or involve massive investments. There are so many simple and commonsensical things our industry could be doing to innovate that are low tech and in reach without massive capital outlay. These span across all phases of the building delivery cycle, from design and development through to production, operation, and even on to end of life. I attempted to outline some of these ideas in an article published in The Conversation back in 2023. For those of you who might be thinking, I'm talking my own book on innovation. Don't believe me, believe the data. The Australian Government's Productivity Commission published a report on housing construction productivity in February 2025 that shows that construction is at the bottom of the table for investment in innovation, and furthermore, that this is putting a serious brake on our ability to build enough houses in this country. To describe all of the things that the industry could do to turn around this low innovation mindset and create a culture of innovation would blow the scope of this piece, but I'll certainly try to return to this as a topic for future essays. What we can say for certain is that building has an innovation problem. We can also safely say that there is no path to a future of building that is more efficient, more affordable, and higher quality that does not involve innovation. And by implication, there is no road to a future of abundant housing that does not also pass through a town called innovation. In future, I look forward to introducing some of the ideas and initiatives from around the world that can help to show how this innovation could appear. Until then, bye for now.